Let me give you some fun fruitcake facts. I mentioned this last week. The oldest reference to a fruitcake dates back to Roman times. The recipe included pomegranate seeds, pine nuts, raisins, and were all mixed into a barley mash. But did you know ancient Egyptians made a type of fruitcake that was left at the graves for loved ones as an offering to provide them food in the afterlife? Told you it was an everlasting fruitcake. Fruitcake was historically referred to as plum cake in England. Maybe you didn't know that one. In 1490, Catholics were finally granted permission by the Pope to use milk and butter in their fruitcake. I don't know what you use in place of milk and butter. I saw that fact, and for the life of me, I sat there and thought, what would you use in place of milk and butter in a cake? I don't know. But just so you know, in the 18th century, fruitcakes were outlawed throughout the continental Europe for being sinfully rich. Okay. In 1794, President George Washington received a fruitcake. Washington allegedly sent it back with a note explaining it was unseemly for presidents to accept gifts weighing more than 80 pounds, even though it was only 8 inches in diameter. Mail order fruitcakes in America began in 1913. If you receive a fruitcake this year, all right, if you receive a fruitcake and have no idea what to do with it, just so you know, on January 3rd, you can go to Minota Springs, Colorado, which is the self-proclaimed fruitcake capital of America, and you may participate in the National Fruitcake Toss. Wow, that sounds like it could be kind of a lot of fun. So if you get a fruitcake, you don't know what to do with it, there you go. It's all kind of interesting. And it's supposed to kind of get you thinking about this idea of fruitcake, because fruitcake used to be this really great thing that people got at Christmas time, and nobody really knows when the downfall started. I mean, most accredited to more choices being available, and so as our cultures mixed, there were other things that people began to like more than fruitcake, and so fruitcake just kind of got a bad rap. Others attribute the changes to preservatives. After all, that made other confections last longer, and fruitcake never needed preservatives because it was naturally long-lasting. And some say people just grew tired of fruitcake. It was exchanged and given, and you ate it every single year, and at some point it just faded into a tradition, and people just got tired of it. And I think about that, and maybe the story of Christmas has more in common with fruitcake than we think. Can I just share with you guys? I struggle with Christmas a lot of times. I did. I struggle with Christmas because I know why I celebrate it, but it kind of gets lost, doesn't it? I mean, okay, let me rephrase that. I know why I say I celebrate it, but in my celebration, the reason I celebrate kind of gets lost. I mean, there are other holidays celebrated at this time, and well, at one time, Christmas was king. But now we are discouraged from saying Merry Christmas, instead being asked to say Happy Holidays. The story of Christmas, the true story of Christmas, unfortunately has found its place on the bookshelf next to Frosty the Snowman, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, Santa Claus, and believe it or not, Jack Skellington. All of these are part of what we call Christmas now. Even amongst followers of Jesus, why we say we celebrate Christmas is but a very small part of our celebration. Often it's placed in the corner in our decoration and displays. Ironically, Christmas is a time when we want less to do because we're just so busy, and we focus our attention on a day, not a person. Thus, enter this little series, Finding the Fruit in Christmas. The idea behind this was to give you a chance to take a stop and take a look at your life and take a look at the way you celebrate Christmas, and instead of going about it the normal way, begin thinking about the fruit of the Spirit that you find in Galatians chapter 5, verse 22 and 23, but the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. Against such things, there is no law. Now, I'd like to make sure you see this. It's one fruit. Usually when we talk about this, we say fruits of the Spirit. These are not fruits of the Spirit. This is a fruit of the Spirit. So we've got one fruit, different in 9 different aspects. So last week, we looked at these aspects, and we decided we'd go looking in the shepherd story, and we would look for 4 fruits. And we found goodness, joy, peace, and gentleness. And they were all connected to the message of Christmas. God had been silent for 400 years up until this point. The kingdom of David, it was just the things that legends were told of. And although the Jews still hold tight to the promise of the Messiah, the message here said, guess what? He has arrived. So the message of Christmas brought us these 4 aspects of the fruit. And well, not surprisingly, as we turn to our next story, it's all about the Christmas journey. And then today we're going to look at patience, kindness, faithfulness, and self-control. If you have your copy of God's Word, you can make your way to Matthew chapter 2, verses 1 through 12, and I will join you there in just a second. Christmas journeys are important. Did you know the average American travels 4 days at least between Thanksgiving and Christmas? If you want to suck the celebration right out of Christmas, just go ahead and start talking about Christmas travel. Usually the words do not equate with the word vacation. You end up with your schedule all upset. You end up sleeping in a strange bed, if you're lucky. You might actually end up on an air mattress or in a sleeping bag or on the floor, or who knows where they'll put you up. There never seems to be the right brand of food wherever you are. And well, let's be honest, there's so much family time involved, you just can't wait to go home. And you know, when you arrive home, you swear next year, I'm going to Hawaii for Christmas. That's going to be my Christmas travel. And you know what? I get that. But these guys, they were all about the journey of Christmas. I mean, keep in mind, you might travel for just a couple of days. The guys we're going to look at today traveled for 2 years to get to Christmas. I don't know about fruit, but they've got to be nuts. And their story, again, is found in Matthew chapter 2, verses 1 through 12. After Jesus was born in Bethlehem in Judea, during the time of King Herod, Magi from the east came to Jerusalem and asked, "Where is the one who has been born king of the Jews? We saw his star when it rose and have come to worship him." When King Herod heard this, he was disturbed, and all Jerusalem with him. When he called together all the people's chief priests and teachers of the law, he asked them, "Where is the Messiah to be born?" "In Bethlehem in Judea," they replied, "for this is what the prophet has written. But you, Bethlehem, the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah. For out of you will come a ruler who will shepherd my people Israel." Then Herod called the Magi secretly and found out from them the exact time the star had appeared. He sent them to Bethlehem and said, "Go and search carefully for the child, and as soon as you find him, report to me, so that I too may go and worship him." After they had heard the king, they went on their way, and the star they had seen when it rose went ahead of them until it stopped over the place where the child was. When they saw the star, they were overjoyed. On coming into the house, they saw the child with his mother, Mary, and they bowed down and worshiped him. They opened up their treasures and presented him with gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. And having been warned in a dream not to go back to Herod, they returned to their country by another route. Our Christmas travelers absolutely, positively had to have the aspect of faithfulness in their journey. What is faithfulness? Firm adherence to the promise or observance of a duty or loyalty. And I don't think we give the Magi enough credit here. They followed the star that they believed would lead them to a king. We don't know why they believed it. We're not told. But here's what we do know. Once they had belief, you know what had to happen? They had to take action. They couldn't just look at that star and say, "Wow, that's a nice star." They couldn't look at that star and say, oh, let's chart it. Let's draw a picture of it. They couldn't look at that star and just say, it's there. In order to find Christmas, they had to take an action. They had to pack up everything they had, and they had to go on a journey. And well, we see Christmas as a day. They saw Christmas as a quest. It wasn't a day to get together and celebrate. It was a journey to find a king. It was a journey to find, they didn't know his name, but we know his name. It was a journey to find Jesus. And when they got there, they said their intent was to worship him. That's funny. I think a lot of times when I come to Christmas and I get here, I don't think I really came here to worship. Why do we usually come to church for Christmas? What's the word we use? Celebrate. Isn't that what we do? Isn't that how it's supposed to work? I'm coming to celebrate. Who am I really coming to celebrate? Well, I'm coming to celebrate Jesus. Really? We'll take a look in a moment how they chose to worship him. I think it's very telling. But I just want you to know that along this journey of faithfulness, they had a chance to say enough is enough. Along this journey of faithfulness, they were not afraid to stop and ask for help. I have to remind myself of this one all the time. Because I like to pack my camel and start moving. And then when I get more things to do, I just like to put more on my camel and just keep going. And sometimes I don't think about the fact that God never intended me to take this journey all by myself. They had to stay on course until they actually reached Jesus. Note they did stop by King Herod's, but they knew their journey wasn't over. How do they know? Well, because the star was still right up there in front of them. Because of that, they had to show some patience. How many here think you're Christmas patient? Yeah, I'm not. You know, it's funny, when you have kids in the house, there is no such thing as Christmas patience. When your kids are young, or when they're still kind of act like they're kids, you understand there is no such thing as sleep in on Christmas morning, right? It's not going to happen. Your children could sleep until noon every other day of the year, but on Christmas morning, you will be up bright and early. As a matter of fact, odds are they're not even going to go to sleep. They're going to go there and they're going to lay in their bed and try to be still all night long and not make a lot of noise and make sure that the Christmas gifts are going to be there. They can't wait for Christmas. They just can't wait for Christmas. The question is, on that Christmas journey, do you ever ask your question, are we there yet? Is it Christmas already? Can it just be over? Can it be done with? I'm tired of Christmas. Do you not reach that point? When it comes to Christmas being patient, they had to move at God's pace. That had to be obnoxious. They could only travel at night. That meant all day long they had to sit around and think about what's the next thing. Maybe they watered their camels and they got themselves ready for the next thing. But they understood there was no traveling during the day. It had to be at night. Why? Because they were following a star. And I don't know much about astronomy, but I do know this. I don't see but one star during the day, and that would be the sun. All the other stars are hidden by the bright light of the sun. So they had to wait, and they had to sit there and wait for it to get nice and dark before they could make their travel. They knew where they were starting from. They started from home. They know that place. The amazing thing is they had no idea where they were going. Could you imagine that kind of Christmas journey? I'm going to start at home. I'm going to get in the car. I'm just going to start driving. Where are you going? I have no idea. West. Don't want to go east because not so far I can go, right? You know, I'm going to run out of land here real quick in Virginia if I go east. But if I go west, where am I going? I can go anywhere. They had no idea where this adventure was going to lead them. They really did not know how long the journey would take. We're told that it was 2 years, identified by the fact that Herod went off and killed all of the children that were 2 years or younger based on what the wise men told him, or the Magi told him. But they didn't know that. For all they know, this was a six-month journey, or maybe just a few days, or maybe it was going to be a lifetime. They didn't know. They had no idea what it would cost them. We're a budget kind of family. I admit it. And we like to budget for anything. But can you imagine? You go to your wife and say, we're going to follow the star. How long are we going to be gone? No idea. How much is it going to cost? I have no idea, but we're going to do this. That doesn't sound very logical, does it? And they were going to have to patiently wait for God to lead them. They had to wait on God's direction. I think when it comes to Christmas, sometimes we get a little ahead of God. I do. I get into the point that, you know what, I'm kind of like, okay, put a stamp on it, put a label on it, put a clock on it, done. Next holiday, please. Oh, that one will be in about a week when we have New Year's, right? There's just no patience for Christmas anymore. We want it, and we want it all now, exactly how I want it. And because there's no patience, there's no kindness left in Christmas. But there was for these guys. We were told they presented him being Jesus, with gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. Now, I want you to remember, what did they say they were coming to do? Worship him. And when they arrived, that's exactly what they did. But here's some things you should know about their journey. It does not say at that point they understood the concept of who Jesus was. I'm sorry, little drummer boy. You didn't come knowing he was the Messiah. Who did they say they were coming to worship? A king. They weren't looking for a god. They were looking for a king. For all we know, there was a good chance they came in hopes of making peace with this brand new ruler. Their intentions were not godly at all that we know of. All we know is that they came. And when they got there, well, they understood the idea of bringing an offering to a king. I mean, if you want to make peace with a king, you want to show them some kindness. And so that's exactly what they did. First, they brought their offering in physical form. Gold, frankincense, and myrrh. We sang about these in the first song coming right out the chute this morning so that you understand. They brought a gift to him. Not the other way around at first. They did not come seeking a gift from him. They came and brought a gift to him. The gift back to them, the exchange came in the fact that when he gave his life for their sins. But the beginning was to bring a gift to him. And how did they present the gift? Well, in a very spiritual form. They bowed down and worshiped him. I started looking at this and I finally decided what exactly this moment in Scripture is. It's the very first Christmas service. And I want you to ponder something for a second. How long do you think their Jesus experience was? Let's see. They got there to the house, knocked on the door. It said that Mary came and opened the door, and they came into the house. And there was Jesus, and they unpacked their gifts, and they handed them to Jesus, and they bowed down, and they worshiped him. I don't know how long they knelt. And when they were done, they went home. There was no music? No. There was no band. I guess these are rich dudes. They could have brought a band with them, but the Bible doesn't say they have a band. There was no sermon? No. There was no sermon. Nobody got up and explained to them, now this is Jesus. Let me take you over to Isaiah and explain to you all the prophets. No. They simply came in, offered their gift, bowed down, and left. Now I want to tell you something. If it had been me, after all the distance I traveled and the expense I put out, Mary should have at least offered him a meal, correct? No. You know why? Because they didn't come looking for an experience. They didn't come looking for a day. They didn't come looking for a meal. What did they come looking for? A king. A person. And when they found him, Jesus was enough. Wow, that's pretty impressive from these guys that have never been to church a day in their life. They seem to understand more about Christmas than I do. They came and they didn't need all of that. It's like the Grinch that stole Christmas. It came without boxes. It came without ribbons. It came without songs. It came without toys. It came without Christmas trees. It came without balls. It came without celebration. It just came because guess what? It's not about a celebration. It's not about a day. It's not about festivity. It's not about a decoration. It's not about any of that stuff. When I boil it down, what was Christmas supposed to be about as we celebrate it? Jesus. So we're going to do something really odd this Christmas day, and I realize this causes some people some angst. If you want your big formal Christmas celebration service, we're going to do that. We're going to do that on Christmas Eve, 6 o'clock. We'll be right here. We'll have the whole thing going on. I promise you, we'll sing Christmas carols. We'll light candles. I will not burn the building down. Not in the plans, at least. Okay, we're going to have Christmas, the big service on Christmas Eve. And then let me invite you. Christmas morning, 11 o'clock, this building will be open. You're welcome to do exactly what the wise men did. Come, offer, pray. You may receive communion, and then go home. It's not going to be some big formal blowout. Because guess what? We're going to keep this focused right on where the focus should be. And I realize that's hard. But you have to understand, we're just going to keep it rather simple on Christmas Day. The wise men, though, when they were done, their story wasn't over. We have one more fruit to find. It's called self-control. And having been warned in a dream not to go back to Herod, they returned to their country another route. Along their journey, they had made a stop to determine, were they there yet? They met this guy named King Herod, and they told him of his plan, and they informed him there's a new king in town. And you know what? He said, when you find him, let me know. I'd like to come worship him too. He was lying. Because Christmas to him was not about going and worshiping Jesus. It was about protecting his throne. It was about protecting his place in society. It's about protecting his territory. You get that, right? That's why Herod wanted to know where Jesus was, because the plan was to kill Christmas by killing Jesus. Wow. That's important for us to remember, because I think a lot of times I'm a throne protector. Okay, I know I'm a throne protector. I get it. I'm a throne protector. I want my Christmas to be my throne. And I want my Christmas to be where I sit, and the focus all comes on how I want to receive Jesus. That was Herod. The wise men, on the other hand, well, they were just there to try to find him. And well, at the end, God told the Magi all about Herod's deception, and he told them, go home another way. Now, I don't know about you, when you go on a Christmas holiday travel, the last thing you ever want to see is a detour sign. In my neighborhood right now, they're doing all this construction. I don't know what they're replacing. I don't know whether it's gas lines or water lines. All I know is they've got streets dug up everywhere. And every morning when I get ready to go to work, about 3 streets have detour signs. So I leave my house and I turn up the street that I'm used to go, and there's a detour sign. So I turn around, I go to the next street, go up that one's got a detour sign. We have to keep working around until we can get around all, and it's frustrating. And I'm going 15 minutes to drop Benji at school and then come here. Last thing I want to see when I'm on a trip is detour. And here's God telling me, yeah, I know you've been at this for 2 years. You're going to have to take a detour. The last thing I want to see when I'm on a trip is a sign that says accident ahead. You know what that means, right? There's been a crash, and that means one of the lanes is blocked, or all the lanes is blocked. On Christmas holidays or Thanksgiving holidays, or whenever you're traveling the holidays, what does that mean? All the traffic's going to back up. And you're going to have to come to a perfectly still motion, and then you're just going to have to sit there and practice your Christmas patience. And you know, a lot of people, they do that. They get from one lane to the other, trying to get a little ahead, one car ahead, do this ahead, you know that. Or maybe we get a little impatient, we beep the horn. These guys, they were probably ready to go home. It's been 2 years. They found their king. They worshiped their king. They delivered their presents. But God said, if you go back and do what you said, there's going to be an accident ahead, because Herod's going to come after the child. The last thing I want to hear when I'm in an airport and I'm going to travel is all flights are canceled. Have you ever been there for that moment? When not, I remember this last year. You're standing there and you're like, you've got your ticket, you're ready to go home, you're tired, you're exhausted, you've had all the Christmas you can take, and your plane is coming, and all of a sudden you look up there and it says, canceled, 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 and there you are and you're stranded. These guys were ready to go home. They had fulfilled their mission, their journey. They had played their part in the story. But God said, not yet. They received a warning, not a command. Now, I found this interesting. I never really paid attention to this until this year. God did not say, you must go home this way. What did he give them? Give them a warning. He looked at them and said, warning. The guy that you met, Herod, he is the villain of the story. If you go back, this is going to end badly. You have to do it my way. But he didn't say do it. He gave them some choice. Self-control. The ability to control oneself. In particular, one's emotions and desires or expressions of them in one's behavior. Especially in difficult situations. It's not one of my strong suits. This is probably the fruit, the aspect of that fruit that I have to work on the most. I'm not a self-controlled kind of guy. I'm a blow the gasket, pop the cork, you know, bulldoze the problem, steamroll, whatever you want to call it. That's me. But they had to show a little self-control because the easy thing would be go back the way you came. I mean, if they go a different direction, there's some risks. Yeah, it's probably going to take longer. What if they go back the wrong way and they get lost? What if King Herod becomes angry and, well, he comes after them? Remember, he is Rome's king after all. He could wage war. All of these risks, and well, I guess the wise men, the Magi were definitely wise men as they decided to do it God's way. They decided to listen to that warning and take that warning and say, change your direction. And it says they went home a different way. I don't know which way they went. I guess they still went east because they came west to get there. So they had to go east, but they had to pick a different route to get where they're going. That's because they were observing the journey, not the day. It wasn't about arriving at a point in time. It was arriving at a destination of a person. It's this idea. Live fruit. Seek Christ. Find Christmas. I pointed this out last week. Sometimes we get this all backwards. We want to find Christmas, and then after we have Christmas in place, then we want to seek Christ, and then after we find Jesus, then we want to talk about living our life for him. That's not what you see in the story. When you read the story of Christmas, it's all about starting out. Live fruit. Follow the actions. Follow where Jesus is. Live what you say you are, what you believe. Isn't that what the shepherds had to do? Isn't that what the wise men had to do? And because they were living what they believed, it drove them to seek Christ. They weren't looking for Christmas. Okay, Christmas didn't actually exist at that point. They weren't looking for a holiday. They were looking for a person. And the amazing thing is, when they found the person, they had a reason to celebrate. Wow. I don't think we can have our path down correctly. We've got it all backwards. So let me encourage you. There are 2 weeks until Christmas. Only 2 weeks? Okay, I'm not saying only 2 weeks. I'm saying thankfully 2 weeks. There are 2 weeks until Christmas. So you have 2 weeks to look at your life, look at your Christmas, and decide, are you merely trying to arrive at a point in time that when it's over, you can cross it off your checklist? Or are you living fruit, seeking Christ, and once you find him, you find Christmas? If you're here this morning and you've never found Christ, I invite you. Rich is here, Bud's here, Dean's here, there are others here. Just stop and say, could you please explain this whole Jesus thing to me? I'm sure they would sit down and say, hey, this is what it means to find Christ. we'll show you what it means to be a Christian. But if you've done that, let me ask you to take a challenge and go and really evaluate how you're doing this Christmas thing. And ask yourself, is it just a point you're trying to arrive at? Or is it the lifestyle you're living? Because it's all the difference in the world.